Mackenzie.
Lamar.
It's finally happening, for better or worse. We're doing Street Fighter at John Braun's multiple time request, one of our biggest fans. And I think we can both agree this is a bad film. I think John Braun also agrees it's a bad film, but it's not beloved in some circles because it's bad. It's so bad it's good to some folks. I will talk about where we fall on that, but I want to know to you, what defines a good bad movie, and do you get any enjoyment out of films that are so bad they're good?
We were talking about this off mic a little bit the other night, and I haven't thought about it too much since, so it's part of the problem. I'm sure I could think of one that I'm like, mm-hmm. that's a bad movie, but I like it, yeah. You know? And I was even, I remember I was looking at my wall of movies going like, well, this one isn't great and this one isn't great, you know, and I like it. I think one of the ones that comes to mind for me that I still really enjoy is, and I think I've talked about it on the pod before, is A League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. And like, okay. To me, that's actiony, it's campy, it's cheesy. Like, it's not amazing by any means. Like, the writing is meh, the acting is cheesy, but the effects are kind of fun. And, you know, and if you are a nerd like me and you know all the literary references throughout, you're like, this is still a good time. Mm-hmm. So that's probably an example of one. But I think by and large, like, I'm kind of just not into bad movies. Like, I usually the whole time am annoyed that I'm watching it. So it's hard for me to be like, well, that was a fun experience. You know, maybe it's different yeah. in a group too, you know, like we were doing the other night where it's like, this is funny because we can talk shit with each other. I feel like there's no stakes
when you're watching a film that yeah. you know going in is going to be bad because you don't feel yeah. bad about talking or not paying attention or laughing yeah. at the film. And yeah, for me, I feel like a good bad movie is one that fails spectacularly at everything it's trying to do. You know, when you look at one like a cult classic like Tommy Wiseau's The Room, which we've mentioned before, mm-hmm. it's a fucking horrible movie and it makes no sense. Everything he was trying to do, but it's enjoyable almost in spite of that, where you're just laughing your ass off. And then the more you find out about the behind the scenes stuff and all these things you can pay attention to during the film, it just makes it an enjoyable experience. So that to me has always been what sort of defined these good, bad films.
But would you like go back? I mean, The Room is maybe an example for you, but like, would you go back and rewatch that?
Oh yeah. I rewatch The Room every I rewatch The Room, I'd say every like 2 to 3 years because it's a comedy experience, unintentional comedy. Another one I've mentioned on the pod before that isn't as notoriously bad. I think it's probably got higher ratings, but Knock Around Guys is a film that's just, it's goofy as all
Remind
hell.
Me who's in that?
That's Vin Diesel, Barry Pepper.
Oh, that's right.
That's the one where John Malkovich does a horrible Italian accent. Like,
which is Seth a very Green. John Malkovich thing to do. He just does bad accents, let's be honest. Yeah. Y'all stop giving him accents, okay? Like, Rounders, it's not working.
Rounders is another great bad John Malkovich accent. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's another one. I'm trying. There was one more that popped in. There's a horror movie called Spookies. That is literally two films, two completely different screenplays shoved together.
I feel like you've talked about that one yeah. before.
And that one, when you know what you're watching, it makes it so much more enjoyable because the movie on the whole, again, makes no fucking sense. You're like, but when yeah. you know that that's what was happening behind the scenes, now it's funny to laugh at how they weave those two completely mm-hmm. separately filmed movies together.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of some of the other ones we were talking about the other night. But I mean, like, I think I even own a couple that are not great movies, but I still really like them for maybe even nostalgic reasons. But mm-hmm. I don't think I have many that I'm just like, I think it's funny that this is bad. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm not laughing at how bad it is. I'm like, well, this is cheesy, but I still like it. That's probably like my line. And then we get past that and I'm like, I'm just over it. I'm not into it anymore. I'm out.
All right. Well, real quick, before we get started on today's episode, like we mentioned John Braun and his request to do this, I wanted to give him the chance to sort of defend this movie in some way. So we're going to throw that in here so you guys can hear why he was campaigning so hard before we sort of rip this. But I'm curious to get his take.
During college, Street Fighter the movie became something of a personal refuge, a comfort film that played perpetually in the background. Before I knew it, I'd watched JCVD flex those coke-fueled muscles from Brussels hundreds of times. I found myself intoxicated by its chaotic charm and bizarre campiness. To this day, it remains a favorite of mine, not just as a relic of my past, but as a genuinely fascinating piece of cinema.
Identify yourself.
This is the collection agency, Bison. Your ass is 6 months overdue,
and it's mine.
Kyle?
At the heart of this madness stands Raul Julia as General M. Bison, delivering a performance that feels completely out of place and yet utterly perfect. Let's be clear, Jean-Claude is not the star here. It's all Raul. His theatricality turns every line into a declaration worthy of a Shakespearean play, from passive comments on food courts in Bisonopolis, or rolling the words superconductor electromagnetism off of his tongue.
Surely you've heard of it. It levitates bullet trains from Tokyo to Osaka.
It levitates my desk,
where I ride the saddle of the world.
I mean, what movie does this man think he's in? The blend of humor and broken necks is a new form of whiplash, but I am here for it.
Something wrong, Colonel. Come here prepared to fight a madman, and instead you found a god?
I think what I love most, though, it isn't just the camp or the chaos, it's what it represents. This is Hollywood fumbling its way through the early days of video game and comic book adaptations, throwing character backstories aside for something that made more sense? Does this make sense to anyone?
Watch your back, Lee.
I didn't know you cared.
We don't. You're the only one who can sign our expense accounts.
Street Fighter is something that's raw, messy, and obviously assembled in a boardroom by people looking at pictures of characters they've never played. It's the kind of movie where a Belgian actor with a heavy accent can play the role of an American colonel in the Allied Nations Army and scream to a group of soldiers that he is going upriver and going to kick that son of a bitch Bison's ass so hard the next Bison wannabe is gonna feel it. It's ludicrous, and it revels in it.
You have made me a happy man.
Next, I'll make you a dead one.
Like I said, Street Fighter the movie remains a favorite of mine, easily making my top 10, and I know how crazy that is. It's a relic of a time when movies like this could exist. We don't get trash of this caliber from Netflix. Unpolished, unrestrained, and so utterly committed to the bit that you can't help but appreciate the sheer scale of its preposterousness.
Vega, where were we? You were losing.
It's not going to be everyone's cup of tea, but there's something special trapped in the celluloid of this motion picture. I really appreciate you both taking the time to look at it, and I extend my deepest sympathies to Mackenzie. Lamar knew what he was getting into.
This is Gaia.
Cammy here. Colonel, are you all right?
I'm okay. I'm just half dead.
And Bison?
All dead.
Welcome back to We Drink and We Watch Things. I'm Mackenzie.
I'm Lamar.
And we are continuing Fan Jan with Street Fighter, the fucking movie. And if it wasn't clear from the intro how I feel about this movie, now you know.
Your
now
misery you know. Level today is just going to be at a constant like 9.5, I think. As we
also, my Longhorns lost last night in the playoffs, so like I'm not in a great mood to begin with, and I wasted time watching this movie this week. So if y'all expect me to be nice today, incorrect. You are in for Mackenzie Extra Spicy Edition. However, we do have a fun cocktail. So what's that? What are we drinking today?
Well, I fucked up. Well, no, okay, I didn't fuck up. I was given late advice. But we wanted to call this Hadouken because I think that's the obvious Street Fighter reference. One of the things that I hated about this movie is the Hadouken that happens is so downplayed. And we'll get into the budget and all the problems with this film. But I didn't even think there was a Hadouken. And I was like, there is. It's not even in the movie, and that's the easiest thing. Turns out he does do it, but it's so subtle that you don't really notice that it even fucking happens. But either way, this is called the Hadouken. It's 1.5 ounces of silver tequila, 1/2 ounce of mezcal, 2 dashes of chocolate bitters, 2 dashes of regular Ango bitters, and then a little bit of blue curacao to give it the color. Mm-hmm. And then what we found in the mistake was I made mine with agave for the sweetener, and that's like a brown, so mine came out greenish, unfortunately. Should be
mine
blue,
came out blue,
like Mackenzie's.
But it's a dark blue. We did want it to be lighter. So if you're doing this, we would recommend simple instead of agave. Yeah, regular simple.
Typically, you're putting agave with mezcal and tequila. But I think for the color's sake, you're going to want to do that. And then we also smoked them. I finally got around to buying a cocktail smoker. I'm not going to name the name brand yet because I'm still not sure how much I like this one. But maybe in TBD. Future it'll perform a little bit better.
All right. Well, cheers to that.
Cheers. Let's get fucked up and talk about this piece of shit.
I'm gonna need to, you know? Gonna need to. Okay, well, we're gonna do some quick basics, and I really don't even want to go through all these people's background, to be honest. I just don't have the patience today. But this is a Street Fighter 1994, and I'll give you the ratings up top that I'm pretty sure will tell the tale for us, right? It's 4.1 out of 10 on IMDb. It is 11% from critics on Rotten Tomatoes and 20% from audiences. So not much better. I also feel like that's like Street Fighter loyalists, perhaps who are just like, I have to like this, that they made a movie out of this, you know?
I honestly think it's the opposite. I think most of the gamers fucking hated this, and we'll get into all the shit that's missing and changed and just nonsensical. But I looked at the IMDb rating and I clicked into it because I was curious. I was like, 4 actually seems high. Objectively,
it does seem high.
I'll tell you guys up front, taking the fun aspect of how bad it is that you can laugh at it, this is probably like a 2 or a 3 objectively. But on IMDb, there's 77,000 ratings total. Almost 5,000 of those gave it a 10 out of 10. So John Braun is in that group, I assume. And it's those people who are like, oh, this is so shitty that I love it, is my guess on that one.
Wow. Yeah. John, you're going to have to report back. Like, did you rate this 10 out of 10 on IMDb? Did you contribute to this rating? We need to know. Also, just know that we are in a fight, John. But thank you for referring this movie.
Most people gave it 4. That was like the common, I think, when you look at like, what is it? Mean. What's the one that's like the most common one? 4 seems to be the highest number rating on IMDb. So that's about accurate.
Yeah, I didn't even dig into it that much because I hard agree with how shitty these ratings are. So, but yes, I agree. Actually, I thought it was a little high. So this was written and directed by Stephen E. D'Souza, who we didn't dig into this the other night, but we believe must just be a Street Fighter fan to have done this because it had myriad issues when it comes to how this was produced, so on and so forth, but also from a budget perspective, like he donated his salary to get this movie made, which is fucking wild to me. But by and large, he's mostly a writer. He's not really primarily a director.
Action too. Like, and he's done a lot of really good. Yeah. Die Hard, Running Man, Commando, 48 Hours, Judge Dredd, the Sylvester Stallone one. But it's like his career sort of tapers off in the mid-aughts because I think that niche of action films, with the exception of the Expendables series, which kind of parodies all of that and brings all those people together, was sort of done. You couldn't just make mindless action anymore. So I think his career just sort of went nowhere. And this was the second movie he directed and the last movie he directed. So to your point, more of a writer.
Yeah, he's directed like some TV episode kind of things before this, and he did you know one more TV movie after this, and then that was it. So mostly a writer, and again, I think this is a case of a fan wanting to get this movie made. You know what I mean? So the major cast and crew that we spend most of our time with is relatively small. There's like a lot of people involved, but the people we see the most are
a lot of people needlessly involved. The cast, a lot of people need to include every character, like the entire roster of every Street Fighter game, and some of them don't even speak. It's
a little laughable. I narrowed mine to a top 5. Feel free to jump in here if I miss any though for you. So Jean-Claude Van Damme, obviously, in a really interesting turn as Colonel Guile. And if you don't know Jean-Claude Van Damme, wow, we're old, and you are not, because he's been in a lot of things, TVs, movies, etc. So I was actually going to ask you, like, what did you first remember him for?
I remember as a kid seeing both Kickboxer and Bloodsport, and they're basically the same fucking movie, and I still don't know which one is, because I think it's the same bad guy in both, and it's the same general plot line. And then I remembered Double Impact, where he played two characters, yeah. which I can only assume was to collect two salaries for twice the cocaine budget.
100%. 100% is the motivation. I agree. Yeah, I think the only thing I remember him for, like, having seen in full rather than, you know, just in passing at whatever event or thing, was Double Impact for mm-hmm. me. So that was the main thing that I remember him from. But also Raul Julia, who by all accounts was an utter gem in yeah. on this film and on this set. And if you don't already know what he's from, the mm-hmm. Addams Family, like he, you know, that's what he's probably most well known for that you guys will recognize him from. But he really commits to the bit in this one, and we'll
he's
get
doing
into
the
a
most
bit more.
He is trying to make this work. I guess he took this role because his kids loved the games, and obviously this ends up being his last theatrical role. I think he died what, a few days before they wrapped, or
yeah, shortly after they wrapped the film he passed. Like, I think he was literally hanging on for dear life during this production. His family was with him the whole time to like help care for him on set and things. So yeah, he really, I mean, he gave his heart and soul to it. I think he knew it was going to be his last project probably. And as cheesy and terrible as this movie is, in my opinion, I think he, again, really commits to the bit and does a good job with what he's given, you know?
He also ended up winning. He's the only person to ever posthumously win an Emmy and a Golden Globe. It wasn't for this shit. It was for like a TV miniseries or something like that. But he's the only person to have ever done that. So,
Okay. That's cool. I didn't realize. We also have Ming-Na Wen, who plays Chun-Li. She is, most people probably don't physically recognize her for this, but she's the voice of Mulan, the OG. Mm-hmm. I was saying this to somebody the other day, and they were like, which Mulan, the animated or the real life one? And I was like,
you know damn well which one.
Which one? Which one? What do you think I'm talking about? Mulan, the Mulan, which, by the way, if you haven't seen it, is incredible. So go watch it. But
still doing stuff today. She was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. like every season of that, I believe. Mm-hmm. It was one of her only live action. But yeah, lots of voice acting mostly.
I think at this time, too, she was most well known for ER, actually. And I remember because we watched ER religiously in my household. And so, and I remember one of the nuggets I read about this is that she like went to George Clooney after this film was made, and she went back to the ER set, and she's like, my career is over. This movie was so bad. And he was like, girl, it takes a lot more than that to end a career. I should know. Like,
he's been in some bad stuff, George.
Yeah, he's like, I've done some bad movies. Don't you fret. Your career is not over. So I always thought that was hilarious that he sort of coached her through that a little bit. We also have Mr. Damien Choppa, and he plays Ken. And I just thought he looked like such a Street Fighter character to me. So I thought that was worth including. I don't think most people really would know him from a lot. He is in some like Steven Seagal stuff. Like he was in Under Siege and Blood In, Blood Out. So he does these same type of movies basically. Yeah. And then Kylie Minogue, who also was by and large just beloved on this set. People thought that she was a gem. She was, you know, really making up for Jean-Claude Van Damme's antics on the set from what we hear.
Apparently so they had an affair. Did you read that?
I don't know if that was like confirmed, but maybe.
I think it was straight from JCVD's mouth. I don't know if Kylie confirmed it, but according to
I was gonna
him,
say,
he,
know, like,
he recognizes he was a mess on this set and like coked out the whole time and then claims he had an affair with Kylie Minogue. Maybe he's just making that up to sound cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really trust like his recollection of things personally. But, you know, yeah, if she admits it, great. But if not, I do know she was going behind him and cleaning up his messes. So perhaps they were. Maybe she was backing up her boo. Who knows? But
I didn't realize that she was an actress before she was a singer, because when I was a kid, I just remembered The Locomotion, and then she sort of came back around with like Can't Get You Out of My Head. So I didn't realize she was acting before she started singing. And then she's like the Australian, I don't know, who would you compare her to? Like Madonna? Like she decades spanning musical career, highest selling Australian female of all time. Like that's kind of bonkers because we only know a few of her songs here in the States. But
Yeah, I mean, that checks out. I didn't know that either. I mean, for the longest time, I really only thought of her as a singer. And I remember the couple of things that I've seen her in. I'm like, oh, you know, I'm just like surprised that she's in them. And one of them is Moulin Rouge. I'm on Moulin kick today.
They should do a mashup of those two.
They should. That would be fascinating.
A bunch of burlesque dancers try to save China.
The vision that just popped into my head. It looks like she was the green fairy in Moulin Rouge, which you can't tell when you watch it. Like she's just, you can't tell what the fairy looks like. You can just see it. And so I didn't realize that was her. But yeah, she's done a bunch of stuff. And then obviously, of course, as a musician, she's done a bazillion things, but she did a lot of TV too, and some Australian TV and all that jazz. So those were kind of my biggins. Beyond that, I wasn't, you know, super interested in delving into the entire cast. Did you have any that you wanted to talk about?
The only two I wanted to mention, because honestly, outside of Raul, I think the MVP of this is Andrew Bryniarski. He plays Zangief. And honestly, the three or four times that I actually laughed out loud at something that was in the script, not an unintentional laugh, were things that Zangief says. I think he carries like little the humor of this, because a lot of the 90s action tropes that come out of Jean-Claude Van Damme's mouth and the shitty one-liners, just you're not laughing at those. They're not landing at all.
No, his delivery is so bad. Like, it just is not funny at all.
I remember when the boats show up and I'm like, fuck, those boats actually look awesome. Those boats have more charisma than Jean-Claude Van Damme does in this movie.
They do. They do. But I agree. He's like, he's got the physicality of it. And then he also did the like eyebrow thing and the side looks. And he does the like profile. I say this very intentionally. He does the profile look of the character in the game.
Yeah.
Like you, because that's how you see them in the games, obviously from the side and whatever. And so I was like, there was like only two or three moments that I was like, this looks like the game. And usually he was involved.
Yeah. I mean, he kind of gets rewarded for it. He does have a career. He was in Any Given Sunday. And then he actually ended up playing Leatherface in the 2003 Texas Chainsaw Massacre with Jessica Biel, which I think is one of the good Texas Chainsaw movies outside of the original. So I thought that was kind of cool. The only other one I wanted to call out, just because I recognized him, was Miguel Nunez Jr. as DJ, who is one of those characters who it's like, what is his purpose in this? He has three lines.
There's and it's just, no purpose.
We need it. But I was like, I know him from something. He is in a Friday the 13th, The New Beginning. You know, I'm a big horror guy. And then he's also in Return of the Living Dead, which is like beloved zombie comedy from like the 80s, I believe. But he's in that as well.
I did forget a couple that I wanted to call out, mostly because they make me laugh. Jay Tavare plays Vega, and the main reason, and you heard me say this a half dozen times while we were watching this, he just like has hair and poses for days, this fucking guy. You
they
can tell
want him
whole,
to talk.
He they just didn't even want him to talk. He's just there to lean against a wall. He's there to like flip the braid. He's got 5 pounds of mousse in the top of that braid. Like, he's very committed to being the eye candy on this film. And he looks like, I don't know, a male gymnast has been turned into an actor. And, you know, he's you should check him out on Instagram today is what I would say. I found some real gems after watching
he's
this movie.
He's posting some thirst traps on there.
He's posting some thirst traps. He's like also a life coach now. We have thoughts.
Who isn't?
Anyway.
Who isn't a life coach? I'm a life coach if you guys ever need it.
I was going to say, I'm going to go put it, add it to money. My bio. We should add it to our bio that we drink and we watch things. We are a life coach.
Have you tried drinking alcohol and watching a motion picture? That's the only advice we give.
We think it solves all problems, really.
I had read that he actually, and this kind of explains it, is his English wasn't great. So that's why they actually cut lines of his. He only has, I think, 4 lines in the film. But he does have some of the cooler fight scenes, which there aren't a fucking lot of in this movie. That's complaint number one.
Yeah, he is Native American. I can't remember which nation he's associated with, so that's interesting. But Wes Studio is another actually Native American actor on the film who plays Victor Saget. He's the eye patch guy. Oh, okay. And he's been in a ton of stuff. He's really cool. And actually, he's also Native American. He's a Cherokee Nation, I believe.
But there's a third person. I don't know. I think his last name, and I want to get this right, but like, I think it's Rainwater is his last name. He plays T-Hawk. Great name. But yeah, I think I said this when we were watching it, of just one positive of this movie, it might be the most diverse cast up to the year 1994. There is just everybody is even the extras, there's representing, because it's supposed to be this global army, this United Nations type army endeavor. So it's like, it's a super diverse cast. So credit to them for that, at least.
Yeah, that is Greg Rainwater. You were right. So yeah, there's like Native American, there's myriad types of Asian, whether that be East Asian or, you know, Indian Asian, things like that. Like we have a ton of different representation from where this is supposed to be based, basically. Like it's Southeast Asia. It's very vague, but it's just Southeast Asia. But then there's also, to your point, there's supposed to be people who are British, there's supposed to be people who are American, there's supposed to be, you know,
American. Jean-Claude Van Damme is supposed to be American. Like, which is, we need an American captain to be the star of this film, and they're like, let's get this guy from Brussels. That makes sense.
Oh my god, and his accent is so thick, and you're just like, how? And then the America flag the whole time on his, not only the patch on his uniform, but also definitely a stick-on tattoo on his person, and you're just like, I the whole time just wanted to be like, scrape it, just wipe it off. Like, I was like, this looks so cheesy and so bad. Anyway, so yeah, we got a good diverse cast here. How they all perform is a different story. Yeah. Really super quick, if you have not seen Street Fighter, the movie, you're only aware of the game, which doesn't have a plot really. They went places with this plot, we will say. But the summary is, in the midst of a civil war in Southeast Asia, a general intensifies the climate of violence by kidnapping 63 UN delegates. To free the hostages, a colonel leads a group of fighters who will have to use all their skills to be successful.
That is making it sound much more cohesive of a plot.
I was literally about to say, I was like, that makes so much more sense than anything we that we watched. Like, the whole time we were watching it, Janelle was sitting next to me and we both kept looking at each other like, what is happening? We don't know. Yeah,
why are we here? Why are we in this location? Anyway, let's throw down a spoiler warning because I want to roast this shit.
Okay, so again, if you haven't seen this, which I don't recommend, turn around, don't drown. It's spoiler time.
So I want to knock this comparison out real quick. I think it's hard to talk about this movie without simultaneously mentioning Mortal Kombat, which came out the year after. Another video game adaptation. Another game where the plot of the game is so simple. Both games are basically just, there's a tournament, you know, we're going to see who the best fighter is. Granted, Mortal Kombat has the whole, you know, we're going to take your universe or your world, whatever it is, if you guys lose. But Street Fighter, it's like, I don't know why they felt the need to, if we're saying that this guy is a fan of the games, he donated his salary, he wanted to make this. I don't know why he felt the need to be like, make this hostage situation and make it sort of a war movie, as opposed to just, why couldn't we just have a fighting tournament? Like, Warrior did that and got Oscar nominated. It's literally a movie about UFC. Like, there's a way to do this.
Well, and you can just, like, it's very simple, right? It can be like all these people traveling to this location for this big tournament. Let's fucking go. And then maybe we should have, we would have some actual fighting. Like, that is the crux of
fighting.
That is the crux of the matter for this movie to me. How many times were we like, is there going to be a fight? When is the fight? I've seen zero fights. Is there going to be a street fight? I haven't seen a street fight yet. Have you seen a street fight? Like, we, the whole time, for an hour and 25 minutes of this movie, you are like, where is the fighting?
Yeah.
And it would also be the better for it. Like, I'm not here for action just for action's sake, but this movie would have been better if there were more fight scenes.
Like, yeah.
Which I can't even think of another time that I've said that or thought that. And that's how bad this is, y'all.
Like, we mentioned at the top of the director and writer, this was the last movie he directed, and he had this niche. And this just feels like the last gasp. It's mid-90s, and these movies are being phased out, but he just ran back all the stuff that worked in the 80s and was like, we're going to have this hero, we're going to have these tropes of stormtrooper syndrome, where all these soldiers with automatic weapons can't shoot a guy who's just standing in the middle of the room. There's all these things that are just reminders of a time when you could get away with making that kind of movie, and this is sort of the last gasp, and it just does not land for me.
And interestingly, I mean, I will say, I agree, this is one of the last ones to do this kind of thing and be successful, because it still made a fuck ton of money. You know, it was $35 million budget and it made almost $100 million. So, which especially in the 90s is like a really solid return, right? Now it's not successful unless you make $1 billion or whatever, but it's a pretty solid return for what a piece of shit this is. And so I want to understand, like, did people go see it because it was like a spectacle to go see this terrible movie? Like, did you come out of that theater and tell your friends, if you saw this when it came out, I need you to tell me, did you come out of this theater and tell your friends, go see this movie, it's terrible? Because I feel like that's the only way it could have propagated to $100 million.
I asked that when we were watching it. I said, I wonder if kids, because I feel like maybe I saw some of this when I was a kid. I don't know that I sat down. I definitely didn't see it in theaters. But I was just like, did children who saw this like it? Because it feels like it's aimed at kids for the most part. It's rated PG-13. And the other thing that I would say to your point is this was a time when you still got excited for video game adaptations of movies. It's when, you know, this was one of the ones where you were like, oh, most video game adaptations are pieces of shit. Now we know that it's hard to make a good video game adaptation. But back then, you know, people were excited for the Super Mario Brothers movie. That was a piece of shit. People were excited for this. This was a piece of shit. Mortal Kombat was kind of the exception to the rule. But I would say back then it was like, oh yeah, I have to go see Street Fighter. I love that game.
I guess so. And I think I maybe just this, like, I missed the boat on this because, like, as you know, I was not allowed to play video games when I was a kid. And so any video game exposure that I got was definitely at a friend's house and very limited. And I definitely, like, I was that kid who was like, I'm coming over to play your console. Like, I'm literally friends with you because I want to use your Nintendo 64 or your Sega or your whatever. I was that asshole, just to be clear, because I was like, I never got to play at all. And I was like, I want to play this. And I remember playing Mortal Kombat and I think Street Fighter once in a while, but I was definitely of the two a Mortal Kombat kid. And I remember seeing Mortal Kombat when it came out for that reason as well, of like, I do want to see this. But to your point, again, they just keep it so simple of, let's go travel, let's do this tournament, let's watch these fights. And it's like, it's all the things you want from the game. That's the thing.
And they lean into, this is what you were looking for. I think there's two other key things. I think you're 100% right. Mortal Kombat leans into the silliness. Like, they're embracing it. Whereas this is sort of trying to be this badass action movie. I think Mortal Kombat allows it to be kind of silly, ham it up a little bit.
Yeah.
The second thing I would say is the budget issue. Jean-Claude Van Damme was paid $8 million of the $35
million.
So it's like, when you're giving that to your actor, some of that money could have gone to making the Hadouken actually look legit, or like letting Dalzim actually stretch his arms because he's just turned into this scientist character. And then at the end, he's got his shirt off and you're like, oh, now he kind of looks like Dalzim. Is he going to do the arm thing? Oh, Blanka, this thing we've been building up the whole movie. Is he going to do his electric?
It's so pathetic.
Yeah.
Like, the Blanka thing is so pathetic. Yeah.
And you spend so much time on that fucking Winter Soldier storyline.
Oh my God, you do.
For him to come out and have like one scene and then he's like, I'll just die now, I guess.
He also looks like an average dude whose face got changed and got a shitty wig. Like, the production value of him as a character when he's supposed to be super beefed up, which if you look at the character, and I'm sure most of you know this better than me, but if you look at the character from the game, he's like huge, he's buff, he's like a big brawny dude. And if you look at him, he's just a dude who's actually not even that ripped and has, you know, a wig on him. It's so, so anticlimactic.
They say like, oh, body mass increased by
71%.
And you're like, did he weigh 92 pounds to start? I don't get this.
It was insane. And then to your point, yeah, you get 30 seconds of him. You know, you're like, really? All this, we're watching this build up, we're waiting for this to happen. We have the other doctor who's held captive to make this happen and feels deep, deep guilt about bringing Blanka to life or whatever. And you get him for 30 seconds and you're just like, really? It was so, but yeah, I agree. It's anticlimactic and it is trying inherently to be too serious. Yeah.
I
agree.
Anticlimactic is kind of the name of the game here, because I remember saying, as we got to the, I assumed we were building up to like, oh shit, okay. Yeah, this first hour and 20 has been rough, but this last 20 minutes or so, they're going to do all the fights. And we're finally going to see Blanka do his thing and Dalzim do his thing. And we're going to get a Hadouken. And instead, I'm just like, is this what edging feels like? What the fuck did I just do to myself? Because you don't get any of that. It's like a very boring.
But see, edging at some point, at least you eventually get off. Let's be honest.
That is,
and
not,
this.
Yeah.
And this never happens in this one. Just to be clear, you do not ever get to that moment. And it's really, it's a painful process. And I think like you said, they do save it for the last 15, 20 minutes of the movie, but it's still, like, to your point, it's still anticlimactic. It's, none of them are great fights. None of them.
They're shot so poorly. They're doing so many quick cuts where, like, every time there's a punch or a kick or somebody rolling out of the way, it's a different shot. And when you're doing hand to hand combat, like, you look at something like John Wick now, you know, we've come so far of just
stare at it, you know,
choreographed fight scenes. This, just, again, director only did two movies. It shows here because this is such a shitty 90s action sequence.
There's also, like, There are real goofs, as you know, if you ever go to IMDb and you look at trivia and you look at goofs or whatever, there's real goofs there that you don't have to go there to find them. They're on the screen. You see them outright. I remember when I turned to y'all and said, I was like, he just got his head thrown through that wall and you can see the fucking set behind it. Like, you literally can see the setup behind it. The production value is bad. Like, the props are bad. The costumes are meh. You have a couple of characters who really look like their characters. And I think also that, like, again, about that Andrew guy, he looks like his character, and that helps quite a bit. And then you see a couple of these folks, like, work their way up to their actual kind of costume from the game. And you're like, okay, there's some satisfaction there. And then they don't deliver on it, you know, and it's not even the majority of them, you know. And Chung Lee, as we've seen throughout, is like trying to be made into this super serious reporter type who weirdly clearly has some kind of crush on Jean-Claude Van Damme, which, if you're going to commit to that bit, commit to that bit. Yeah. They don't ever make it a real thing. And she looks like almost like she's fangirling. It's really kind of silly. And then all of a sudden she's Chung Lee, but she's annoyed about it. It's like she doesn't want to be in this costume. She doesn't want to have to fight. Like, there's so much confusion about who she is supposed to be for me the whole time I was watching it. I was like, really?
It's the kind of movie where I'm sure someone like JB, who has seen it 100 times, can make sense of the plot. But as not having seen any bits of this for the last 3 decades, I was like, I couldn't follow. Like, just wait. So, is her news crew undercover? Like, did they go into this knowing that they were going to try to invade? Yeah. Like, or is it just they were a news crew, but then they decided, oh, let's do this thing? And it also doesn't help that half the cast, the good guys, are just tied up. To your point about there's no fights, they're just in handcuffs for like 20 minutes while other shit is happening. There's just so many meandering moments in this where there could be actual action sequences.
And I want to touch on something you mentioned there too, of like, you have some people who are supposed to be quote unquote good guys from the game who you are not rooting for in this movie. Like, you do not like them. What are their names again? I don't know the game as well as you. It's like Ryu and Ken. Yeah.
I also liked, and the one thing I did like in this was they say both Ryu and Ryu, because the game is obviously made in Japan. And I remember as a kid, my friends used to make fun of me because I always said Ryu. I'm like, no, it's Ryu. But in this, they use both. So apparently you can get away, if you're going to put any faith in this movie at all, you can get away with both.
I put zero faith in this movie. So TBD, y'all tell us how you're supposed to say it. But so like, again, Ken is one of the ones where I'm like, he looks like the character. Actually, Ryu, whatever, as well, looks like the character. So you get some satisfaction there where you're like, oh, I recognize this person. But then again, they don't close the deal on it. And on top of that, they are assholes the whole time up to that point. Like, you are just not rooting for them. And they seem very, you know, situationally loyal, right? Like, they're going to go the way that the wind blows. Yeah. They're just mercenaries. They don't really care how this all turns out. And you can have an anti-hero. You can have somebody who's not 100% awesome. I'm not saying that, but they don't do it well. You just don't like them. You're not rooting for them at all.
I think the first mistake on the part of the writer director here was, if he is a fan of the games, I don't understand why you pivot from having Ryu be the main character, Ryu and Ken, to being like, oh, let's, like, I get why he did it, but it's like, oh, let's make the American, quote unquote, again, the main character. He's the main good guy. Because I think if you hadn't done that, you probably don't need to cast Jean-Claude Van Damme. You don't have his salary.
Yeah, you don't have his huge
books.
Budget.
You don't
yeah.
have his ego. You don't have him disrupting the set and being coked out. And I wanted to say on this, I did like a little bit of a deep dive into Jean-Claude. And apparently he has been, like, again, grain of salt. It's celebrity, so you never really know. But he has been diagnosed in recent years with like a bipolar disorder. And he blames some of his drug habits on that and not knowing what was going on with himself mentally. Take that how you will. So it's like, I'm not trying to critique the guy, but he was a fucking mess on this set. And he was disruptive and not showing up. And they had to have they had to pay a handler to like get him onto the set.
Who
on
was
time.
A bad influence as well. That was the thing that blew my mind about. They would go party together. and not both not show up to set. So like, you're just, yeah, you're throwing good money after bad to take care of this guy, and he's a mess. And I think
maybe he misunderstood the job. Maybe he thought he was just the coke handler. He's like, this is my job, right? I just deliver
the coke.
I take
right?
the fall yeah. if the cops show up.
Oh my God, truly. And I think, like, to your point, that two things can be true, right? He can have had some other unrelated yes. mental illness and still have been garbage to deal with on this set, which, like, we should, like, it was a $10,000 a month coke habit in 94 by his own accord, right? So, like, that's wild. That is a crazy yeah. habit. So I think, like, this is a problematic person to have on your production. And I think it shows in the production result as well, because they said multiple times, we had to reshoot things that we weren't planning to shoot. We had to prep whole scenes that we weren't ready to prep. Like, and again, when we're talking about the quality of the set or the costumes or the, you know, the performances, even if you're unprepared to shoot something and your schedule is being shot to hell by this main character, I mean, yeah, how great can the result really be? So as much as I want to give the director a lot of shit, and I will and I do, how much of this is because your lead really fucked yeah. with the whole production process?
And then the other tie-in that I wanted to say with Mortal Kombat, which thank God for this, but apparently Jean-Claude turned down the role of Johnny Cage in the Mortal Kombat yeah. movie in order to do this movie, and I feel like that movie Bless. Would have been hindered by him as well. Apparently he was the inspiration for the original Johnny Cage. Him and mm-hmm. Midway couldn't come to an agreement about like his likeness and getting paid. I think he did end up playing like a voice of Johnny Cage in one of the games or a TV series. So it did come back around kind of full circle. But I thought that was interesting that we could have had the Mortal Kombat movie be a piece yeah. of shit, and maybe this ends up being really good. So thank goodness for that.
Yeah, thank goodness for that. I mean, he says himself that he contributed to the downfall of his career at this point because of yeah. the way he negotiated his salaries and like what he expected. He was like quite the diva, very self-important and very demanding when it came to salary and things like that at this time. And when this failed so poorly, really from a performance perspective, nobody wanted to deal with that. They were like, it's not worth it. This product is so bad. Like, no,
yeah.
thank you.
Yeah. And for a, again, second time director, Steven D'Souza just, I don't think he got it. Apparently, they were already 6 days behind schedule, like 10 days in, and he started doing this thing. I had never heard this expression. Maybe you have, since you're more of a cinema buff, but the John Ford trick. Have you heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
So you're behind schedule. So what do? You just rip a page out of the script and yeah. skip it. And apparently he was doing this like once a week, just, we'll just skip this scene. And then they yeah. get to the end of shooting and realize, oh, there's key things we don't have on tape. Now we got to do reshoots in like Vancouver or something. So there's a reason this guy went back to writing after this, for sure.
Well, and he even like, he has things that he doesn't in post-production fix well. Like, you have lines that are being dubbed after the fact. You yep. can tell they're changing the lines, and then mm-hmm. like the physical speaking does not line up with what is being said. And I think the most obvious one was Chung Lee, but I think it happened multiple yeah. times. And so, yeah, I just think it's just a mess. I mean, the whole thing is a mess. I will just, again, to give credit where it's due, where I would focus, the only positives I can focus on about this movie are Raul Julia, who again, yeah. really commits to his character. You know, he is like, if you hear some of the lines this fucker has to say in this movie, they are insane. They sound ridiculous. He acts ridiculous. He looks ridiculous. His name is fucking Bison. Like, he's, which I never saw a single bison once. Guys, can somebody give me a bison? If I have to sit through this, I at least would like to see a beautiful animal. No, we just get this crazy person. But he's so, it's like the Michael Caine effect in Muppet Christmas Carol, like we were talking yeah, about.
He's taking
it's just
it seriously.
The, like, he's taking the whole thing seriously. He is the villain and he is playing the villain. And
you
he
said
just, like,
something when we were
says,
watching it about his research for this that I thought was interesting. What was that?
Yeah. So he looked into specific dictators about how to present this evil dictator. And he took, for example, like, I think it was Mussolini's gestures, like the way that he moved and stuff, and some of Stalin's phrases and physicality, like the way that he would stand, the way that he would move. The reason that the art aspect of him, Bison, having like being painting and having an artwork up there in his little lair is because of Hitler. It's an homage to Hitler being an aspiring artist. And so he really looked into that, and he wanted his villain character to be very Richard III. It was a very sincere in Shakespeare, very Richard III, serious villain, bad guy, who is just relentlessly ambitious and like seeking dominance and power and all of that. So he took inspiration from very real life villains and committed to the bit 100%. So like he just took it very seriously throughout.
Yeah, I think he's clearly the star of this. He's the bright shining star in the middle of this mess. I wanted to circle back to Zangief, and I just, like I said, the whole line where there's the truck rolling down toward them and it's going to explode, and he says, quick, change the channel. They're watching it on the TV. That line is great. And then it's the original. I didn't think of this until after we had watched it. But at the end, when he realizes Bison's a bad guy, DJ tells him he's a bad guy, and they're having that conversation.
Yeah.
He's like, wait, he's a bad guy. He doesn't realize. I think that's very clearly why they use that character in Wreck-It Ralph. And he's giving the speech about, just because you are a bad guy doesn't mean you are a bad guy.
You're a bad guy.
That's clearly a reference to this, which I think is kind of cool. But I think we get the original, what is it? We're the Millers, that meme where he's like, you guys are getting paid. That,
yes.
This beat that out by like 15 years. So props to you, Street Fighter, for the like, you got paid meme.
You got paid for this?
Yeah.
Really? Well, and to your point, he has like two or three lines that are actually funny, independent of anything else going on. And it does make you chuckle. I did like one line that Cammy's character, Kylie Minogue, says to Chun-Li, which is, it's very of the time, but like she has like pigtails, you know, like the character.
Yeah,
and she makes fun of her for having pigtails, which again, Chun-Li isn't great in this, whatever. And she's like, oh, you're one to talk, because she has like the buns at this point. And I just thought it was such a fun, quippy back and forth really quick. I mean, we don't need women making fun of women, don't get me wrong, but I was like searching for the bright spots in this dumpster fire.
Bechdel test. Bright spots. Right. They talk about hair.
They talk about your hair. They make a little joke. I mean, yeah, this is where we are, folks. This is how desperate we are for good things in this movie.
And I think that, like, to piggyback on that, of good, bad things, when you pointed out earlier about crashing through the set and seeing the back, or like just little things like that are what make bad movies good sometimes. I love that he throws an actual like cassette tape, like a music cassette tape, into the player and it plays like a VHS tape. It's like, this is 94. We know what those do. It's not fucking that. You couldn't have just had him put in something more sophisticated looking. They were just like, eh, fuck it.
You could have thrown an 8-track in there and people would have been confused but bought it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, what is this? It was just weird. It was a weird choice over and over.
The controls being the arcade, like the joysticks.
Oh my God.
I know that's intentional. Like, that's supposed to be like, look, gamers, we did something for you. And it's like, I don't like that. That looks fucking stupid.
While we were watching it, I like yelled out loud. I was like, are we kidding with the arcade buttons right now? It's so bad. It was so bad. But I will say, like, again, seeking for anything good in this experience, it was a good group watch of like, if you want to watch something and everybody be confused and annoyed and talk some shit, maybe turn it into a drinking game like we were talking about.
Yeah.
I think it could work for that, for entertainment purposes. But other than that, I did not enjoy this experience at all.
Yeah, it's a bad one. I don't know if I'm on board with it being a so bad it's good. There were things that did make me laugh, but there were so many points of it that, like I said, I was just bored. I wasn't laughing
at
what was on screen. I was confused about why we were at like the fucking Shadaloo flea market. Like, I thought, I don't know what the heroes were trying to do. Like,
nobody knows.
The beginning of the movie, he says, I have these hostages, give me $20 billion or whatever the hell it is. They say no. At that point, I don't know why we didn't just go to his fortress at the beginning. I don't know if they didn't know where it was. But again, these are things, maybe they were said in the movie, but because it was so meandering and confusing, I didn't track why we were in different locales, who was on whose side, and how we all decided to band together and fight together at the end.
We all turned to each other a half dozen times, like, what is going on? Nobody knew what was going on. I was getting tired watching this movie to the point where I was like, I'm drifting. I was like pulling up IMDb while we were watching it just to keep myself awake and engaged. Like, it's just not one that's an enjoyable watch. It is not a so bad it's good to me. The post credit scene where, which, I mean, I guess credit to them for throwing that in there pre-Marvel and all of this. Like,
yeah,
it's a clever play, I guess. But it's Bison is like being rebooted basically and is back. And it's just like, and you watch it, you see that happen and you're like, no fucking thank you. I do not want a sequel. I do not want another one of these.
I never saw it, but they did this. Like you said, it made money. So clearly they made a sequel. And that one, I think, also like bombed. So,
well, and I think it was that it was worse than the second one. And then they were like, well, we're going to do a series. And then they tried to do the Chun-Li one, like this tale of Chun-Li or something like that. Anyway. Yeah. It's just a mess. Like, no thing. Once you put this thing out, I'm never going to watch another one of these. Like, right. No, thank you. Right. Absolutely not.
There's like one other little throwaway thing for the video game fans. But again, it's nonsensical in the context of the movie when all the good guys at the end are standing there and then the thing is exploding and then they do their poses. Like, that is a direct frame from, from the end of the video game. But it's like, it feels fucking hokey because it's like, why are they doing this? I get why. Like, just put that as a still frame in the mid credits, like a photo of them. Don't have them hit their poses. And then it's just silly.
Yeah, not into it. Well, anyway, what was your rating?
Oh, my goodness gracious. So looking at my notes here, I didn't take very many notes because I just was very confused. But rating wise, like I said, if I were being totally objective, this is like a 2, 2.5. It's pretty rough. The script makes no sense. Now, if I'm going to rate it on how much I personally enjoy it and just laughing at it and talking about it now for 45 minutes and shitting all over it, I think that there's something to be said for the enjoyability of bad films. So for me, it would probably bump it up to like a 4, but I still would never recommend this to anybody as a piece of cinema. People who love bad films, you're going to have a blast. Maybe not even a blast, but you're going to like parts of it, you know?
Yeah. That's a thing. I feel like it's not even bad enough, like, to be good, like we said, to be good, enjoyable, bad movie watching, personally. Speaking of no notes, I have 5 bullet point notes for this entire movie, and it was cheesy, not funny, no fighting, in all caps. Raul Julia is the best thing about this movie. Post-credit scene, like, no thank you. Those are my notes, because I hate this movie. So the rating I would give this is a 2 out of 10. I would not recommend that you watch this unless you're a glutton for punishment. But thanks for hanging with us while we powered through this. It's been a ride.
I mean, if there's a lesson to take from this, it's that if you listen to every episode of our pod and you nag us and nag us, you comment on our stuff, you tell us this move, maybe you'll get a really bad movie for us to watch one day.
Don't give that advice. No, this was, for those who don't know, this was a side deal that I was not privy to. So no, this is not going to work every time because I now know how this
It doesn't
turns
hurt
out.
To try, though. I mean, I'm trying to up our viewership count here, Mackenzie, in our comments.
Okay, well, you can give
play
it
along.
You can give it a try. I'll give you that for sure. Give it a try. Also, give it a try with like a good one. Can I just make that request?
Yeah,
give it
that's
a try
true.
With a
they don't
really
all
good
have to be.
If you
bad.
Lobby for a good one, I'm in. I am in. And speaking of, you know, hopefully reaching new audiences and new ears, come back next week for a special guest on the pod. This is Fan Jan-esque. But it is, we're going to cover 3 films next week.
People love it when we do multiple movies in one episode.
They do. We promise we'll do this better. There's a purpose to this. We're going to talk about short form. We are going to talk about our must talk abouts of 2024 from a film perspective. I chose, and I'm telling you this now so that you can watch them ahead of this ep if you would like, but I chose My Old Ass, which... doesn't sound as awesome as it is. It's very good. It's on Prime. It's one of the reasons I chose it because it's something that you guys can watch beforehand if you want. And Lamar chose something that's on Netflix as well. What was your pick again?
Well, I was going to mention, it just occurred to me live in this moment that like Aubrey Plaza, I haven't seen My Old Ass yet, but I know she's the lead and I know she's having... Yep. Well, you know, thoughts and whatnot to her with the week that she's having. But so we'll be covering that one. On my end, I went with, I believe it's a Netflix original. It's What's Inside, which I think was marketed a little incorrectly. It was marketed as kind of a horror movie. I would describe it more as a Knives Out murder mystery with kind of a Black Mirror tech twist. And I thought it was just first time director announcing himself mm-hmm. to the world. I thought it was unique and just a lot of fun. Highly recommend. So we'll talk about that one.
Yeah, because I remember when you told me this one, I was like, "No fucking course, you picked a horror movie," and you immediately were like, "It's not just a horror movie." So give it a shot. I haven't watched it yet. Transparently, I've been waiting till we're closer to recording that one, so I'm gonna watch it. But yeah, check that one out. And then the last one is from our guest star, and he recommends Kneecap, which again, haven't watched because I'm trying to watch it closer to it. Looks awesome. It's an Irish kind of dark comedy, and it looks hilarious. And then we will also be covering his short film, Barely Breathing. This is not going to be easy for you guys to watch, so I'm not recommending it. It doesn't have the reach quite yet of a Netflix or an Amazon, unfortunately. But if you didn't know, this is Mr. Neil Ruddy, who performs in this as the lead, but also wrote and produced this film, had a partner who directed it as well. And if you haven't heard of the film itself, you've probably seen him on Queer Eye, the reboot. He was in the first series. He was one of the nominees, and really sweet, really charming guy if you've seen that movie or that show rather. And we're really excited to have him. He's actually just a huge film buff. Part of how this came to being is that he and I had connected on Instagram and had been chatting about movies. That it's really as simple as that. And so we're really lucky to have him join us next week.
Yeah, I'm hyped.
We are hyped. So in the meantime,
follow us on our socials, mostly Instagrams, where we're most active. Who knows what's going on with TikTok? Supreme Court figuring that shit out. But we don't do that much on there anyway, so no big loss to us. But fingers crossed for the rest of y'all.
Def getting banned.
So you can also watch video of the pod if you want to see our green/blue drinks from earlier and other visual references. You can do that on YouTube.
And my bookshelf. Spotify. Like, weren't we all here to just look at the glory of my bookshelf? No.
And okay, my CD station back there, so my little knickknacks. But yeah, so you can always email us at wedrinkandwewatchthingspod@gmail.com. Give us your thoughts, your requests, all that good stuff. Just because Fan Jan is coming to a close soon doesn't mean we won't still take requests into account. 100%. So 100%. We got a lot of themes coming this year, and we'll see what we can work in.
Absolutely. All right. Well, for now, go have a drink and watch a thing. Cheers.
Cheers. And also, I feel like we should end this episode by like a massive explosion, but yeah. Then we just walk out completely unscathed, you know, no, shirt not ripped, no yeah. blood. You're just in the middle just of an explosion up. And
walk anyway, away. We'll it kind of matches our colors if we're thinking about it. So I think we should. Cheers.
Yeah. Cheers.